Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning.
Here's the pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
This could be trouble. It's at the wall.
And it's a gunner!
He scores!
Now, Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
A little gloomy outside, but I hope you're doing well today. Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Kelly. Welcome to Sports on a Sunday. James O'Sullivan is our producer and board operator. We'll be with you until 12 o'clock. Nothing impossible with Michael Calhoun on the air between 12 and 1, followed by Jane Duker at your service this afternoon between 1 and 3. Coming up on this program, we're going to talk Blues hockey with Cam Jansen. We'll also hear from Mizzou football coach Barry Odom, baseball with Dan McLaughlin. Hour number 2, Barry Hinson, the head basketball coach at SIU Carbondale, will join us. We'll talk Mizzou wrestling with the longtime coach at Missouri, Brian Smith, his team perhaps primed to win its first national championship. Jim Thome, of course, part of the Musio Awards. Last night, we'll visit with Tom Ackerman. And we'll hear from Steve Holley as we talk about Guns and Hoses and the terrific job that they have done over the years in raising money for backstoppers. Let's go through the headlines for you. The Blues finished just 1-3 on the road trip, or win 1-3 on the road trip, as they were blanked by San Jose last night, 4-0. The Sharks break on top in the second period.
18 seconds to go on the man advantage. Carlson to Couture off Pavelski. Back to Logan Couture, now to Kane, to Couture, shot on, rebound there, and they've scored. Erik Karlsson with a laser from the high slot, off the rebound from Johnson, has scored, and the Sharks have taken a 1-0 lead. Power play goal with 16:26 to play in the second.
They would add three more. They win it 4-0. Busy week for the Blues. They've got four games, including the LA Kings in town, coming up on Monday. Tampa Bay beat Philadelphia 6-5. It was Detroit 3, New Jersey 2, Buffalo 3, Minnesota 2, Ottawa over Pittsburgh 6-4, Montreal 3, Vancouver 2, Columbus beat Carolina 4-1, Rangers over Florida 4-2, Boston 2, Arizona 1. The Kings lose to Nashville 5-3, Calgary over Edmonton by the score of 4-2. Missouri's football team won its third straight, beating Tennessee 50-17 before 88,000 fans in Knoxville yesterday. That's the same score, by the way, that Missouri beat the Vols by last year in Como. Barry Odom's team had to settle for two Tucker McCann field goals in the first quarter, but scored 20 in the second quarter to build a 26-10 lead at the half. They would outscore the Volunteers 24-7. In the second half,
they regrouped at halftime. When we left some things out on the field, we knew execution-wise there were some things there that we missed out on. So for the way that they came back and executed in the second half, the ability to win on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball was huge. Getting and forcing a couple turnovers was as big as in those moments for us as we've had all year. And then offensively, methodically, this kept extending drives and making plays.
Tigers have won 8 straight in the month of November, improving to 7-4 on the season. They closed the regular season Friday, hosting Arkansas at Faurot Field. Elsewhere in college football, number 1 Alabama struggled early but scored 27 in the third quarter. They beat the Citadel 50-17 to go to 11-0 on the season. Clemson also 11-0. Second-ranked Tigers get 257 yards passing, 2 touchdowns from Trevor Lawrence as they roll by Duke 35-6. Number 3 Notre Dame beat number 12 Syracuse at Yankee Stadium, 36-3. Irish now 11-0. Ian Book, 292 yards passing and 2 touchdowns. Jake Moody kicked a Michigan school record, 6 field goals. Number 4, Michigan over Indiana, 31-20. Number 5, Georgia beat UMass, 66-27. Kyler Murray runs for 3 touchdowns. He throws for 2 more. 6th-ranked Oklahoma beat Kansas, 55-40. Oklahoma State was down 31-14. They come back, though, to beat number 7, West Virginia, 45-41. Gardner Minshew with 7 touchdown passes. Number 8, Washington State over Arizona, 69-20. 28. By the way, the Cougs scored 55 in the first half of that game. In overtime, number 9 Ohio State survives at Maryland 52-51. Dwayne Haskins throws for three. He runs for three, including the game winner in overtime. Number 10 LSU over Rice 42-10. Number 11 UCF extends its winning streak. They're 11-0, beating number 19 Cincinnati 38-13. It was number 13 Texas over number 18 Iowa State 24-10. Number 14 Utah State beat Colorado State 29-24. 15th-ranked Florida all over Idaho 63-10. Number 16, Penn State over Rutgers 20-7. Number 17, Washington 42, Oregon State 23. Number 20, Kentucky 34, Middle Tennessee 23. 21st-ranked Utah over Colorado 30-7. Florida State upends number 22, Boston College 22-21. Number 24, Northwestern over Minnesota 24-14. And number 25, Mississippi State hammers Arkansas 52-6. Kansas would like to have a former national championship winning coach run its program. The AP is reporting that the Jayhawks close to a deal with Les Miles to replace David Beatty. As James O'Sullivan has pointed out, Les Miles has a non-compete. No problem. He's going to KU. College basketball. The talented Billikens of St. Louis U overcame travel issues to improve to 4-0 on the season, winning at Seton Hall 66-64. The Billikens led by 12 in the final 10 minutes. They held off the Pirates, though, to stay unbeaten on the season. Deion Wiley led SLU with 17. Cartier Garden finishes with 14. The Billikens play Pittsburgh Wednesday night in Brooklyn. Elsewhere, number 9 Villanova beaten for the second consecutive time at home. Jordan Lyons with 17. Furman goes to 5-0 for the first time in 30 years. They knock off the defending national champions 76-68 in overtime. Elsewhere, Charles Matthews with 25 points, 18th-ranked Michigan over George Washington, 84-61. And it was number 24 Marquette over Presbyterian, 74-55. After squeaking by Kennesaw State, yes, Kennesaw State 55-52 Friday afternoon in the Virgin Islands. 2-1 Mizzou will play Oregon State today in St. Thomas. The Beavers are 3-0 on the season. In the National Football League, Houston at Washington, Baltimore home against Cincinnati, Tennessee at Indianapolis, Jacksonville hosts Pittsburgh, Detroit at home against Carolina, Atlanta entertaining Dallas, Tampa Bay at the Giants, Oakland at Arizona, the Chargers host the Broncos, Philadelphia at New Orleans, and Chicago tonight hosting Minnesota. I'm Mike Kelly. Those are the headlines of the day. It's 12 after 10. This is Sports on a Sunday on News Radio 1120 KMOX. We'll talk Blues hockey with Cam Jansen up next on Sports on a Sunday.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
I'm Mike Kelly. Coming up our next segment, we'll talk Mizzou football with Tigers coach Barry Odom. We'll close hour number one with Cardinals broadcaster Dan McLaughlin. St. Louis Blues lose last night in San Jose by the score of 4-0. Cam Jansen joins us. Of course, he's the podcast host of Blues Game Day here on KMOX. Cam, good morning. How are you today?
Hey, what's going on, Mike?
Hey, 4-0 last night, so they win one of three on the road trip. Let's just talk about last night. Just your thoughts on where this one got away from them.
Well, I think, you know, they're a little banged up, yeah. You know, especially on the back end, and you know, Schwartzy's out, Alexander Steen's not playing, Patty Maroon gone. So they were banged up, and they played a back in a tough building. They looked tired, probably because they are tired. Ryan O'Reilly looked tired out there. He's been really busting his butt the last couple of games and, you know, doing a lot of things up and down the ice. And you can just see they didn't have it. They had a great game in Vegas, but this last night they came out flat. They had a kind of a tough first period, still in it, and then they took a couple penalties, and Eric Carlson gets his first goal of the year, and they didn't look back after that. So that was a
Cam, we're going to call you back. We just lost him. Cam Jansen joining us, of course, the host of the Blues Game Day podcast. We'll call him right back on his cell phone as we'll reconnect and talk more about the St. Louis Blues. A reminder coming up a little bit later, hour number two, Steve Holly will talk Guns and Hoses. We'll talk about, we'll hear from Jim Tomey as he'll visit with Tom Ackerman. We'll talk Mizzou wrestling with Brian Smith, their longtime head coach. And SIU Carbondale picked up its first win of the year last night. Barry Henson will join us to begin hour number two. Back now to Cam Jansen. Sorry about that. The Gremlins in the phone line. So you mentioned the first period. So they survived the first 20 minutes, but then those two back-to-back minors kind of turned the game, didn't they?
Yeah, and you know what? When you take two of them like that, it just when you're already tired, you know, that just, it just amplifies everything. And you're getting pucks off the skates, and just a lot of bad things can happen when you're killing penalties left and right like that. And it completely wears you out. And again, we just couldn't find that extra step. We didn't have the zone time that we needed to create any sort of offense. We didn't really, you know, pressure their goaltender or the defense corps by any stretch of the imagination. And they came out and they played a solid game. San Jose came out and they're loaded. And they went out there and they did their thing. And they pounced on a tired team. But you know what? Like, tired, whatever. Everybody's tired now. I mean, everybody's tired. I mean, every schedule's bad, I feel like. We've had it easy for the first couple weeks where we had these, like, four-day gaps, you know, where there's no game. And all of a sudden, now you're going to have a bunch of games bundled up here. And I will say this, man. If they don't start putting strings of wins together here, we're going to be out of this thing come Thanksgiving.
Which is just a couple of days away.
Well, we got like five games coming up.
Yeah,
here.
So, yeah, yeah. I mean,
there's a big stretch coming.
Sure, so. four games this week, including hosting the Kings tomorrow night. Let's stay with San Jose just for a moment, though. Did they give the puck up too many times at the center line?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they just, yeah, they did. They did a lot of little things bad, you know. You know, in the D's. I mean, it wasn't huge glaring mistakes, but it's just a lot of little things. You didn't have that jump, extra jump getting in on a forecheck, a lot of one and duns, meaning you dump the puck in and we don't have any, you know, that F1 going 100 miles an hour to create some kind of chaos. We didn't have that. We were a step behind. We were chasing the game the whole time.
So
we turned the puck over in the neutral zone too. Yeah.
Yeah. So Thursday, Sammy Blaze called up. He played 14 minutes last night, playing on the fourth line. He led the team in hits on Friday in Vegas. For a young guy like this that's trying to prove that he belongs, what are the things that he has to do, Cam?
Well, for a guy like that, it's difficult to come up here and be like, well, you're going to have to go be a goal scorer. Well, I don't know how much ice time I'm going to get. I'm not going to power play or anything like that, so I'm going to have to really make my minutes count. And if all you're doing is focusing on one thing, scoring goals, you know, it's probably not going to come to fruition. So what he's doing is he's kind of just he's elevating his game in other ways, kind of like Vladimir Tarasenko's doing it. And if Sammy Blaze is going to go out there and get six hits a night and create turnovers and do little things, the goals will come for him as well as the minutes of ice. But I like his game. Now, is he crushing guys and hurting them and putting a threat on people? Nah. But I like that he's disrupting plays and he's getting a stick in the lane. He did cough the puck up last night, though, a little bit. But I like his game. But if he's the one leading the team in hits, we still have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. So Fabry's been back now for a couple of weeks. And I just kind of, I don't know, maybe I marvel a little bit, particularly it seems to me that maybe he's looked better than I anticipated, particularly coming off of two knee surgeries. Just your thoughts on what you've seen from Robbie in a short amount of time.
As a whole, I like his game for sure. Like, he's fast. He's a Robbie Fabry that we remember 2 years ago. But I didn't know it from last night, though. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not going to pump his tires too much because I honestly did not even know he was on the ice last night. And that's not a good thing. But he has been, when he is on his game, he makes things happen. He creates space for other guys. He elevates everybody else on his line, kind of like a Jaden Schwartz does, where he's going to win that battle in the corner. He's going to spin off of you, and his puck placement's always great. So he's easy to play with, and he's quick. Like, he had a couple breakaways where he just, out of nowhere, just beats guys to loose pucks, and all of a sudden he just, again, creates space for himself. But last night I didn't notice him. But as a whole, I do like his game trending forward.
Yeah, currently paired with 19-year-old Robert Thomas. Just your impressions of the young Thomas.
Same thing. He's gradually getting better. And everybody in the organization obviously has seen that because he's going to be up all year now. And he's passed his 10-game threshold there where they would have to send him back to juniors, which would have been god-awful playing against kids your own age. But I like his game. Again, a little setback last night. I mean, I think that's the case for everybody. But, yeah, his vision with the puck, like he's the kind of guy that you want to play with because he sees the ice extremely well. He really does. And now he's not necessarily flashy or really, really fast, or he's not going to toe drag you or anything like that. But when he gets the puck, he's making plays. And he's making NHL plays. And in the zone, he does that little 10-2, so he opens up and sees the whole ice. He's just got to get his shot down a little bit. I think he's got a lot of chances to have some goals here. And it just, like, flips off the stick or the puck bobbles on him or he takes just a little extra time to shoot the puck. And in the NHL, that gap closes so fast. And all of a sudden, somebody will get a stick in the lane or whatever the case is. And it's pretty frustrating to watch. But once he gets his timing down with his shot, he's going to start putting the puck in the back of the net. and he's already making plays on top of that. So I like his game.
Yeah, injuries obviously playing a role early in the season for the Blues. I mean, you look at it, you mentioned Schwartz, Gunnarsson out, Bortuzzo out, Steen out, Patty Maroon out. Just kind of a thought on what are you hearing in terms of when they may return with four games this week?
I think, they keep everything pretty tight-knit over there, don't get me wrong. A lower body injury could be a million different things. I think Schwartz, he's just banged up. Bertuzzo's probably, I believe it's his knee. I could be wrong on that. He's been banged up quite a bit the past couple of years as well. Yeah, but again, man, everybody's banged up. Like, yeah. It just happens. Like, it's going to happen all year. We're so deep, though, that we should be able to come out of that and have a dirty road win in San Jose with guys maybe getting called up, getting a little bit more ice. They put a little bit more pressure on some of the guys that they've been wanting, get a little bit more confidence in themselves with a higher role because of these injuries. Like, so the injuries are going to happen to every single team. We are deep. That's why we went out and got all these guys. So when this kind of stuff happens, we're going to be ready to rock. And unfortunately, last night it wasn't the case. But you know what? We play tomorrow. You got another struggling team coming in with the LA Kings. So you got to turn it around and got to do it quick.
LA beaten last night by Nashville, but I'm sensing a sense of frustration in your voice, in that that what's happening right now is unacceptable.
Well, I'm hungover too because I had to stay up and watch that game. So you add those together. No, it is frustrating though. And you know, I gotta go in the air and critique these guys every single day. Then I gotta go in the locker room and see them. But what do you do? Like I'm watching these games and it's just like, oh, it's aggravating because they're a step behind. And all of a sudden they go out there and have a great game against Vegas. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, they're back. Oh, no, they're not. Oh, they're back. Okay, no, they're not. Oh, it's a roller coaster ride. And hopefully, we figure something out here. Otherwise, it's going to be a long season.
Hey, man, thanks for your time. Continue the good work on the podcast.
Right on, MK. I'll talk to you later.
All right, see you, buddy. Cam Jansen with us. He is the host of the St. Louis Blues Game Day Podcast here on KMOX. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday. Barry Odom talks Mizzou football. Big win for the Tigers. 88,000 in the house at Neyland Stadium. Back after this on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday on News Radio, 1120 KMOX. Yesterday in Knoxville, Tennessee, 88,000 in the house as Missouri knocks off the Tennessee Volunteers on Senior Day. 50-17. It's the second consecutive year that Missouri has beaten Tennessee by that same 50-17 score. We're joined, as we are each and every week, by Mizzou football coach Barry Odom. Good morning and congratulations.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks. Good to visit with you again this morning, and proud of our team on putting together a solid game plan and executing in an environment that, you know, our kids were excited to go play in, which is fun. And then they at times had to lean on each other the other side, you know, needed help and stepped up and played well together. And that's fun to watch.
Before we break down several aspects of the game, let's go back to the atmosphere, a historic place, Neyland Stadium, right on the banks of the Tennessee River. And you think about this. Jeremy Pruitt's team was 5-5 coming into that game. 88,000 fans in the house. They average 70,000 season tickets. What a great fan base at Tennessee.
It was a perfect day for football. The weather was awesome. And again, our guys were excited to go play there. They knew it was going to be near capacity. And, the energy, when you pulled up, and see that our kids were excited about having a chance to go do that, and then the way that we went and performed took a little time to get going. I think offensively, get into the red area, and we've got to come up with touchdowns and instead of field goals, we finally got that going and on track, and the defensively forced the turnovers the way we did. That allowed us to get the game opened up.
Yeah, you let it 6-0 after the first quarter, had to settle for a couple field goals. They, though, threw a bunch of different stuff at you defensively early on, didn't they?
Yeah, really a couple different looks than what they had shown even, in the last, I don't know, maybe hadn't seen much of some of the things they were doing all year. And so a little bit of a different game plan, and you know, offensively, our staff did a nice job on making in-game adjustments and then getting it corrected on the sideline throughout conversation, and then really in the second half able to apply a few more wrinkles that we wanted to after we knew what we were going to be getting. So credit to them, and then credit to our kids on being mature enough to handle that and staying the course and then going and execute when the number was called.
Here's the other thing I liked is that Tennessee took the lead early in the second quarter. Your team on the very next possession came right down and answered. Third quarter, they open the half, score right away. Your team takes the ball, goes right down and scores. You answered both times.
Yeah, it was big, and our guys have been in it long enough now. They understand the game of emotion. They understand momentum. And, you know, you could feel it in there. You could feel it when it switched sidelines and, you know, the urgency to get it back. And but also don't get too in the moment that throws you off. You know, you know it's there and you know what you got to do to go fix it. But also you can't try to do too much. You just got to continue to play one snap at a time. Know that it's going to be there. You just, when the opportunity is arise, you're going to step up and grab it.
You run for 227. You pass for 257. Larry Rountree saw most of the action because of an injury to Demaria Crockett. 26 carries, 135 yards and a score.
Yeah, I think really up front, again, we controlled the line of scrimmage, which was great. We knew we needed to going into the game, and our offensive line is playing with great passion and great energy, and they're playing smart together. And then our runners are doing the things that we need to on getting yards after contact and then get to the next level and making some things happen. So it's going to be, you know, again, we're going to count and need a number of guys at that spot. And I thought, you know, I think we'll get Demari back. And so we have he and Tree, and then, you know, the two freshmen, Beatty and Bakari, both stepped in and did a nice job in their roles as well.
Three takeaways by the defense. DeMarcus Acy with a couple of interceptions, almost took one back to the house to set up a touchdown late in the first half, and then a scoop and score for Josh Bledsoe, his first collegiate touchdown.
Yeah, the one with Acy there right before halftime was huge because of the way that our team responded. You know, we got they were driving, got the pick, got it down into area of field that you need to come away with points. I think there were 44 seconds on the clock when we got the ball back. Offense first snap. We had one timeout, so we're a little bit, you know, the management of that. You wanted to come away with a touchdown. Got down in the third down inside the 5-yard line, and you know, had a couple different play options on the timeout on what we wanted to do. Didn't feel good enough about getting the field goal unit on the field after running a run play without timeout. So did a nice job on the play design on the call, and then, you know, Drew put it where it needed to be placed, and good execution by our players.
Defense, of course, also had three sacks in the game and really did a good job in terms of, you know, creating havoc, if you will, up front for both quarterbacks. You knocked Garantano out of the game, but then Keller Chris was pressured all day.
Well, I think, you know, a number of ways that we were able to get to the quarterback, and it wasn't just the defensive line, but they did a nice job. But the second level blitzers, some different disguises and looks that we were able to give them helped us out. And then when we got the game in, you know, in control, we were able to line up with four and provide pressure. So we didn't get as many hits or sacks. Only I think we had three or four sacks, but I think he, you know, for the most part, felt pressure in the times that we needed to. And it's not, that doesn't always result in a sack, but it can and did last night. It affected the throws and the read and the, you know, the patience with the clock that the quarterback's got in his head.
Your team now has won 8 consecutive games in the month of November. As the head coach, what does that mean?
Well, I want to win 9. I want to go get the next one. And, you know, I'm proud of their effort. You know, the things that we talk about all the time in the program about being our best week in and week out, you know, building it up, playing as good as we can that week. Don't look too far behind or ahead and focus on the moment. So we got the short week this week. And so in our world right now, it's Monday, and we've got to get to work because, you know, there will be enough of a challenge with Arkansas coming to town. I know, you know, we'll get their best shot, and we've got to put this last one behind us, which I think we have, just judging by the way that we were last night once we got off the plane and back here and had a quick meeting before we, you know, departed our ways. Our guys are focused on finishing, being 1-0 this week and all the things that go into that.
Couple more questions with Barry Odom, Missouri's football coach, on the heels of his team's 50-17 win at Tennessee. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the health of Rashad Floyd. One of the more vicious targeting calls that I think that I have witnessed, held up by one defender on a punt return, and then another player launches. I mean, clearly when he's kind of in jeopardy, launches and, is targeting the player ejected. Just the status of Rashad Floyd as you know it today.
Well, a scary moment for everyone. And, the number one goal that you go into every practice situation, game situation, you want your players to be safe.
Right.
And, Rashad is actually stayed there last night with some of our medical team and just for observation. The report I got last night and again this morning that he was doing much better. And, so that is great news and can't wait to get him back and continue to improve and get healthy and move forward.
Senior Day coming up on Friday, 1:30 the kickoff against the Razorbacks of Arkansas. Just a thought on trying to get as many fans as possible inside of Faurot Field.
Yeah, I think you look at this group of seniors and what they've done and what they stand for, the things that they've been able to accomplish and represent this university in the way that they have. I'm proud of them. I want to send them out the right way. And, part of that is having our fans there and then for us to uphold our end of it, go play our best ball.
Hey, go get it done. Thanks for the visit. I will see you next week.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good one.
That is Missouri football coach Barry Odom. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday. Just a couple other notes before we throw it to a break. Tennessee now 5-6, but again, 88,000 fans at Neyland Stadium yesterday to watch that team. The week before against Kentucky, when they came in 4-5, they had 95,000 fans in the house. Terrific fan base at Tennessee. The other thing to point out, don't know if you noticed this in college football. Iowa State a week ago was home against Baylor. The Cyclones at Jack Trice Stadium had their 50th consecutive game where they had more than 50,000 inside the stadium for a home game. So credit to Iowa State fans as well. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday on KMOX. Dan McLaughlin joins me next on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports on a Sunday morning on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
I'm Mike Kelly, wrapping up our number one of Sports on a Sunday here on News Radio 1120 KMOX. Well, it is the offseason in Major League Baseball, but it's always a great time to talk with the man who handles the broadcasts on Fox Sports Midwest, our friend Dan McLaughlin, who, of course, also runs Scoops with DannyMac.com. No website's broken more stories in St. Louis than this one over the course of the last few weeks. We say good morning, my good friend. How are you today?
Well, good morning to you, Mike, and also congratulations on being the recipient of the Burns Bragg Award at the MAC Awards coming up. That's outstanding.
Well, thank you, and completely a surprise, but means a lot, as you know, because of the time I had a chance to spend with those two gentlemen as a very young employee here at KMOX. So thanks for bringing it up. We're in the off season. Not a lot of things took place last year that people really recognize, or excuse me, last week that people recognize. But this is a big week in Major League Baseball, isn't it?
It is. By Tuesday, all teams will have decided who deserves a spot on their 40-man rosters. So to really put it in perspective, to try to explain why they do this, players who signed at 19 years or older became eligible after their fourth professional season. Those 18 years or younger are eligible after five. And so this all of a sudden becomes something that's very important as it pertains to the Cardinals, with, I think, with three guys. Now, there are some others that could not make the 40-man roster potentially. The Cardinals right now are at 38, so they have two spots to fill if they want. And they could get creative with their roster if they want to. But Ryan Helsley is one, who is a right-handed pitcher that dealt with some health issues this year, Mike. If not, I think he would have been on the 40-man and would have made a dent in the bullpen at some point. But he's got really good talent. The other is Max Schrock, who you may have heard of, who came over in the Piscotty deal. And the other is Genesis Cabrera, who came over in the Tommy Pham deal. So those are three guys that probably need to be protected at some point, at least two of the three. And you're going to hear a lot of news about them this week, along with some of the other top prospects around Major League Baseball that have to be protected on the 40-man, which means then other teams couldn't claim them in the Rule 5 draft in the upcoming winter meetings at in Vegas here in early December.
How active do you think the Cardinals will be this offseason in the trade market?
That's a great question, Mike. I think that most around baseball are looking at the wrong thing. When they talk about Bryce Harper as it pertains to the Cardinals, and I understand that, and I understand the excitement around that, and I'm one of them too. I check it, and it interests me because Bryce Harper is one of the more entertaining names that's come around in the last few years. But if you look at it from the outside looking in, the Cardinals can be one of the more active teams in all of baseball because of the pitching that they have. And if you go back and look at postseason play, and whether it be the Astros 2 years ago, or you look at Boston with Chris Sale on the mound finishing off a World Series, or any of these teams that just try to survive in October, what's the one constant that they have to have? It's pitching, and you can never have enough pitching. Well, right now, as I look at the Cardinals, in no particular order of pitching, they have 11 guys vying for a spot. Miles Michaelis, and this is in the rotation I'm talking about, Jack Flaherty, Carlos Martinez, Michael Wacha, Adam Wainwright, John Gant, Alex Reyes, Daniel Ponce de Leon, Austin Gomber, Dakota Hudson, Luke Weaver. How about that? That's 11 guys I just listed that could be in someone's rotation next year. So what does that mean? It means that the Cardinals, if they want to be really creative with the trade market and get and fill some of the needs that they maybe have, that they feel that they have right now, whether that be a middle of the order bat that Mo has talked about, or a left-handed reliever, and it might be Austin Gomber, who knows, but they could fill some of those needs because they have that one thing that everybody's talking about, which is starting pitching.
Dan, how do you react, though, to those that say the Cardinals need somebody that's going to sell tickets, too?
I think that's a valid point. I would take it even further. I think once Yadi retires and he's got a couple years left on that contract, there's that, I think, the gap of the face of the franchise. You know, we've gone from Ozzy to a gap of McGuire to, I would say Albert, then maybe Holiday, and then now it's been Yadi. And then in two more years, and I'll see it when, and when I see it, I'll believe it when he retires, believe me, because the guy plays every day. I just don't know if I believe it when I got to see it first, Mike, when I see the official retirement of Yadier Molina. But at that point, I think it's something that the Cardinals probably are looking at, and it's something that is important to them. But, yeah, I think if they could go out and get a face of the franchise type guy with Yadi, it's something that they look at. But winning cures all, doesn't it, as you well know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's more important at this point.
As you look back to this past week, and the way I phrased it earlier is that most people may not have taken notice of the fact that there were a couple of things that took place that were announced late in the week in New York City. First of all, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, was extended by the owners.
Yeah, and he's made baseball a lot of money, and he's made the owners a lot of money, and he's had labor peace, which is first and foremost, so everybody continues to make money, and I think that's very important. And secondly, he extends the television deal with Fox, and
exactly,
it's a seven-year, you know, $5.1 billion extension. So he increased those fees of 36%, Mike, and the franchise values are increasing of all the franchises. Local TV ratings are outstanding. And so when I hear people talk about, you know, baseball is dying and the games are slow and this, that, and the other, and I understand it. They kind of nitpick at the game. But when I see those numbers, I think, well, baseball must be doing something right. And you wouldn't have Fox paying those kind of that kind of money and people vying for the rights to these games if the game was dying. So something must be going right.
Well, and I think we're both excited, too, and happy for Joe Buck, because that means he's going to continue to do the World Series for probably as long as he wants to.
Right, and he'll continue. I think it was Kurt Gowdy, maybe he passed,
exactly,
and Vin Scully, and you know, some of the, and I think Tim McCarver was the longest at 24 years of doing World Series, so I'm sure Joe will set the all-time record.
The other thing that I wanted to bring up is, as you know, the winter meetings are just around the corner. There's been a lot of things in terms of the game itself and trying to improve the quality of the game. a lot of things on the table, Dan. I'm curious, what do you think is realistic? Because there has been some chatter about possibly regulating the shift, but also there's been some chatter about perhaps in terms of pace of play, creating a clock. So just kind of give me some thoughts from your perspective on what do you think might stick?
I watch the Arizona Fall League, Mike, and they use a clock, and the players adjust immediately. So pitcher gets the ball, boom, the clock starts, and if you don't pitch within that time limit, it's, you know, it's a ball. And guys adjust. And there was the rule a couple of years ago that if a batter would step out of the batter's box, if it wasn't a ball that was a foul ball, that was against the rules. And the umpire enforced it, and a player would be fined, you know, a couple $100 after the game. Now, granted, if a guy's making $15 million, does he really care? Probably not. But the idea was that he would stay in the box. And I did see initially when it was enforced that the pace of the play was better. And I do think there's something to that. And I've always said this. I don't think that people in the stands care. I think if you went up to the 40,000 people at Busch Stadium, and granted, this is a baseball town, and people that are at the ballpark really don't care. But I do think if we're talking about the fact that it's a seven-year, $5.1 billion extension on television, people at home that are watching the games probably want more action. And Rob Manfred is trying to get more action in the game. It's not great just to see a bunch of people standing around and spitting sunflower seeds. So I get that part of it. So I would like to see, though, I think this is my opinion, and I've talked to some that agree with me and some do not, and these are people that are in uniform. I would like to see the strike zone bigger. And I think if you put a premium on the fact that the player at the plate has to feel that there's a wider strike zone and that there's you've got to put the ball in play, then you'd have more action. This is the first time in the history of the game, Mike, that we saw more strike zones. Now, we're talking over 100 years of baseball. We saw more strikeouts, than we saw hits. So if you widen the strike zone, more hits more strikeouts and more hits, I mean, that's a problem. So if you widen the strike zone, put pressure on the batter to put the ball in play, I think that's something that would happen. And in watching the Arizona Fall League, the pitchers get on the mound, they throw the ball, the players stay in the box. Everything moves. Now, granted, there's not a lot of people in the stands. You know, there's not TV, even though they play it as if there is TV between innings and there's a clock on that. I just think that moves the game. And I think the players adjust. I always believe the players adjust. If you watch in a game of a major league game, if a strike zone is wide, the players adjust to that home plate strike zone, to that particular umpire, even just, you know, from strike to strike or pitch to pitch. So I think the players adjust, but maybe I'm foolhardy. Who knows?
Hey, Dan, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, bud. Keep up the great work with Scoops with DannyMac.com.
You're the best, Mike. Thanks.
That is Dan McLaughlin. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday. Well, it is official. Les Miles is back in the game. Les Miles will be introduced a little bit later today in Lawrence, Kansas, as the next head coach at the University of Kansas. The 65-year-old who formerly, of course, was at Oklahoma State. He was at LSU, but back in the game. He previously reached an agreement of $1.5 million buyout of his LSU contract that allows him to return to coaching. Fired in September of 2016 after a 2-2 start. Ed Orgeron, of course, took over at LSU. But now, Les Miles will be the head coach at the University of Kansas. He replaces David Beatty, who will finish out the season. The school announced back on November the 4th. They also said he wasn't going to return in 2019. He went 6-40 in four seasons. The Jayhawks haven't won more than three games in a season since 2009. Their last bowl appearance took place in 2008. Miles' tenure, by the way, at LSU from 2005 to 2016 was a success. He went 114-34. He won the 2007 National Championship and appeared in a bowl game in each of his 11 full seasons with the program. So breaking news this morning, Les Miles, the new football coach at the University of Kansas, will be introduced later today. The Blues lose again last night in San Jose. Final score was 4-0. Afterwards, Mike Yeo with the media.
It's tough. It's tough. You got that second period. You take one, and then you take another one. We got to be more disciplined there, that's for sure. But yeah, you got to finish it off. We didn't. And then obviously, you know, I don't think that we came into this game just thinking that they weren't going to maybe score a goal, but I thought that our response after that wasn't very good.
Yeah, it seemed like, especially, I mean, they got those three goals in fairly short order. Yeah. After that, it just seemed like it got away from your offense.
Well, it wasn't just the offense. I mean, defensively, we also gave up a whole bunch tonight, too. And until the third period, I thought that the one good thing is that we did show some push in the third period. We obviously didn't grab a goal, but we had some good opportunities, and if we could have got one or two, then who knows. But you can't come into a building like this against a team like this and put yourself in a hole like that.
It's, when you look at what's, maybe you've had game, what do you, when you see that happening, what do you think was behind that?
Sorry, what's that?
I'm not sure there was a question.
Yeah,
offensively,
yeah,
when you look at the troubles there.
Well, it's... In the third period, we generated a number of high-quality scoring chances, and it was all through hard work. It's a simple recipe that we have to follow night after night. And we did it late last night, and we didn't do it for the first two periods tonight. And, you know, we just can't keep coming and saying, okay, it's good one night, it's not good the next night. We have to demand it of ourselves that we bring it night after night for 60 minutes.
Yeah, how concerning is it you get shut out on two of the three games on the trip?
Well, I'd be more concerned if I didn't think that we are capable of it. So obviously we have to respond now. Last game for me should have been something that we could really push and build off of, but tonight we came in and you know, the first period was okay for on the road. They got some shots. I thought a lot of them were from the outside. Would have liked to have seen a little bit more sustained pressure in the offensive zone, but still I thought we hung in there, not bad for a road period. But again, you have to basically kill 4 minutes right off the hop in the second period. You put yourself in a tough position, and then you can't, when you give up one, you can't just go out there and give up two right after that, and then it's obviously a tough game.
You get that early power play, and that's a case where if you're able to take advantage of that and change the
maybe obviously, but we can't be just a team that, if you know, we're good if just things go well early in the game. That we have to be able, a team that is able to steer the game in your direction, a team that's able to deal with the ups and downs of the game and find a way to get to your game and find a way to make things happen.
This is one more case where, just when it seems like you're maybe approaching getting over a hump, that you don't get over the hump.
We're obviously not there yet. So we've seen how effective and how strong we can be, but we have to make sure we bring it night after night.
Blues head coach Mike Yeo on the heels of his team's 4-0 loss in San Jose. They will host the LA Kings coming up tomorrow evening. I'm Mike Kelly. This is Sports on a Sunday. Barry Hinson, Brian Smith, Jim Thome, and Steve Holly next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.